You know me. I walk.
You walk
everywhere.
A lot. I can't imagine anything. What's the most steps? When I was with you, I think the most steps you did in a day, at least when we were living together, was like, what? It was an insane number. Like, I think, no, it was 14 miles. Didn't you walk 14 miles one day?
I did.
Just for fun? For the hell of it?
For the hell of it, yeah.
Hey y'all, this week Bus Ride Talks is here with Tondi Jackson, full-time Northeasterner, publishing, publicity worker, and writer, to talk about all the work that comes after a book is finished, the difference in North and Southeastern cultures, and how far you can walk without complaining in a place that you love. Let's get into it.
Hi Tondi!
Hi Davinia, how are you?
I'm good, it is so good to have you here. It's good to see you again. I mean, I haven't actually seen you since I moved, but we've talked, so that's nice.
Yes, and Facebook. But
yes, all of the things. And you've been doing a lot of things. So when I was with you in New York when we lived together, you were working at Simon & Schuster. You were just starting to get in the publishing world. That's kind of been your thing. So naturally, and also you're a writer. So I'm excited to get to talk about books and books on both sides, because you straddle both like both worlds on the outside of publishing and like being inside and knowing what it's like to actually try to write a book. But let's talk about publishing work. Your bio says you assist with creating publications. What does that mean?
So I assist as in I don't actually create the book. And I also don't have any partake in any of the things that go into the actual writing. So like an editor, an author will send it to an agency, and the agency will send it to the editor, and then if an editor accepts this manuscript, they'll kind of tweak it. Sometimes they'll take out chapters, they'll add in chapters, they'll kind of help this character grow and turn it into something that consumers read. But I'm in publicity, so I do that, the work, after the book is already formatted. Okay. So people coming into the publishing world, I say it's kind of like having a baby. So the mother is the author. You know, they love this baby no matter what, no matter if it's a horrible book or a great book, like they're going to love it no matter what, and they do love it. And the editors are kind of like, you know, the midwives that are like guiding the baby out of the womb as it comes out and kind of take it and take all the stuff out of their face and make it all nice and pretty. And then marketing and publicity are the people that once it's all in a nice bundle, we're the ones that send the Hallmark cards and the, you know, welcome to the world, whoever, to the actual world when the baby's already formatted and beautiful and perfect. We just kind of show the world what it is. That's
a beautiful analogy.
Yeah, that's what I think. Because it's hard for people to understand. It's like publishing, you kind of think that it's just making this book. But really, it's like, yes, we are helping it. But there's marketing and publicity that it's already a book and we don't have that creative outtake. It's more of like telling people why it's creative and why they should cover it and why it should be in media outlets and stuff like that. So
right. And what you said makes me think, because we had a lot of these conversations about how, and I think it's exactly like you said, people don't really understand what publishing looks like because there's so many actual separate parts of it. Like there's the book part and then all of this other stuff. What do you think people misunderstand the most about publishing, either like writers themselves or people who read books and like purchase books?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think it's in two sets. I think if you're an author, you know, you kind of think, oh, I'm just going to send it to an editor. And then, you know, the editor is the ones that pick it. And if they love it, they'll take it. It's whatever. And that's unfortunately not the case. You have to have a literary agent. And everybody kind of forgets about that tidbit. And you actually pitch your manuscript or your book to them first. And I always say that once you have an agent, you're good, because that agent is going to work their butt off for you to get an editor. So it's like once you have that agent, you pitch to hundreds and hundreds of places. And it could be like J.K. Rowling. I think she pitched to like, she got rejected like 100 times or something like that before Harry Potter became before somebody took that book. So you kind of just have to keep trying, You can't get discouraged. And I think a lot of people think, like, oh, I write a book, I send it to a publisher, they're going to publish it. I get emails all the time. I'm in publicity. I don't do anything with actually taking on a book. And, like, in our generic inbox all the time, I get, like, can you, like, look at this manuscript and, like, you know, publish this book? And I'm like, I can't. Like, even if I wanted to, I can't.
That's not how
actually
it works.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to, most publishing houses, especially the big ones, you have to have an agent. And even then, it goes through so many rounds and different things. And then the second part for the consumer that I think they're always thinking about publicity is, like, there's one department, which is an editor. Like, like, if you're reading a book, you're like, oh, the editor wrote this book, and then that's it. They kind of don't think about marketing and publicity. Nobody's really thinking about that. As a consumer, if I'm going to the bookstore and getting a book, I'm kind of only thinking about that book and the author. I don't have an understanding of who's behind this and how many people it takes to actually do everything. So, I mean, you have the editor, you have the managing editors who kind of keep track of the editors. You have art and design who, like, make the book cover beautiful. They have multiple meetings about that design. So people who say, don't judge a book by its cover, that's completely wrong. There are meetings specifically for book covers.
Because you will.
Because you will, exactly. They have, you know, production. We have, like, marketing, publicity, and all of that goes into this book that becomes what you read. So I think that's interesting. Even before I was in publishing, never thought about that. I was just like, oh, the editor, like, you know, makes it nice so that I can read it, and then that's it. Like, you don't think that there's so many different things within it, so.
Yeah, and, like, so you work in the marketing and publicity side. From that side, sort of, like, I know you don't make the book in terms of writing, but what does making a book look like in terms of marketing then? You know, when you have to build what's ready to go out.
Yeah, so first of all, we have to read it. We have to read the book, like, that we are assigned to.
Okay.
And it's kind of fun. I mean, obviously, I love books, but there are certain books that you really want. You know, we call it our dream list. And then you might get those books, you might not. So you have to read it. You have to kind of, I usually get introduced to the author / illustrator and get a sense of what they want to do in publicity. Who do you want me to pitch to? Do you want to be on TV? Do you not want to be on TV? Do you want to be in roundups? What kind of roundups do you want to be in?
What's a roundup?
So it's like a book round. If you go on, like, BuzzFeed and there are, like, 25 books that'll, like, that. And so, that's my team. We pitch to all those, you know, BuzzFeed, Romper, 17 Magazine, like, those, the book pages and the book roundups you see, that's usually us pitching to those places.
Okay.
So in my terms of, you know, building the book is getting it out into the world for when you go on Instagram or when you go online and you search for books or moms that want to have picture books for their children. This month is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. So they have a lot of roundups for books for that. So parents and stuff are like, oh, what do I want my kid to read for this month? I'm kind of the person that's like, oh, well, okay, let's pitch to all these outlets so that all these parents can see this book so that they'll actually buy it. And then, you know, for us also, like, marketing, it's also important that they do what they need to do because people see this book and they want to buy it. And then that kind of helps sales go up and pre-sales go up. So it helps kind of get it going in sales and numbers, which makes money. So
that's what we want.
Yeah, that's what we want, exactly.
Now, do you work in a specific sort of, like, segment of books right now? Like, there's, like, children's books, there's preschool books and things like that. Are you, like, does your marketing work fall under a specific genre, or do you have to do sort of across that?
So, yeah, I do across the board. I'm a publicity assistant, so I have Right now on my list, I have middle grade, picture books, and YA, and then my boss, she has, like, the bigger, more, like, books maybe written by more notable authors or authors that are getting more book buzz. So I also assist her with, like, mailing titles or, you know, just helping her do the day-to-day. So I have a pretty nice list, but her list is much bigger, and her mailings are much more.
And do you have to know all of those books? Like, you have to have read all of them, or at least know all of them?
Yeah, I have to know all of them. It depends on the book. I mean, her picture books, I have to read all of them, because they're easy. So it's like, there's no excuse to not read them. But yeah, I for her other books, like middle grade and YA, she's the one pitching them. So it's like, if I don't know a specific thing, I might not need to know that. But I do need to know about the author. I should know details about them. I need to know everything that she books for those authors. I need to know about. Because if she's gone, I need to tell people what's going on. I kind of have to keep the flow going. Yeah. And then my books are, you know, usually like debut authors, because I'm an assistant. So debut authors that, you know, might have a smaller following, but they're growing. They might be, you know, an author that maybe a little bit older, and then they're kind of like, oh, okay, we don't really care what we do. You know, we need you to help me figure it out. And I'm like, okay, let's work together, versus like my boss's authors are like celebrities and they know what they want and they have, you know, 200, 300 mailings. And all I have to do is basically listen to her. And like, I don't really have, like, I'm not really in the creative when I'm assisting her. It's just like, okay, what do you need me to do? I'll do it.
Okay. That's a good balance though, that you get to have like an in-between. You have your own creative space and then you have like an official space.
Right, in an official space where it's, like, very administrative. But through that, you learn, you know. You learn how to, what those authors want, how they might act. Okay, like, for celebrity authors, never worked with them before this job, and now that I do, I know that, like, okay, their mailing lists will be much more extensive. There's certain things we have to do. There's certain things we have to code to, you know, so it's kind of like, you know what you get into, which is good. So it helps me learn when I'm with her.
Yeah, that's useful for later. Now, you're also a writer. Does your work hijack Cat?
I guess that. He's so cute.
Oh my God. Does your work in publishing sort of like impact your writing at all? Has it changed how you view books and how you've decided to write them?
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Like, I mean, no, extensively. I'm sometimes I can't. It's crazy. Sometimes I write something and I'm like, this isn't gonna fly. Like, this would never happen. Yeah. I also think of when it should publish. Again, this manuscript that I'm writing might not even be fully done yet. And I'm like, okay, well, this should publish in, like, spring and not fall, because, like, fall is, like, such a crazy season. And then I'm, like, thinking to myself, I stop myself. I'm like, hold up. I'm getting way ahead of myself.
I'm not even anywhere near that.
And then it also, you know, I've learned a lot, too, where I always just thought you kind of send your book to just any editor, which you should send your book anywhere you can get to, but you also should send it to editors who, like, you should do research on editors of who you're sending it to, which is, an agent will help with that. But, you know, if this editor wants diverse books or our own stories, own voices, you know, different things that they look for, different interests that they have, you know, I did, like, a round in editorial when I was an intern, and I learned a lot of different things from that. My editor, sometimes she didn't even look at things if it wasn't in her, you know, area, because she had 300, 400 pitches coming to her a day with books that she was like, okay, this isn't what I want. Pass it on. So it's like, they only take a certain amount of books that they read a day. So you have to have something that stands out. I also, when I'm writing, I'm like, okay, has this been done before? You know, now I'm kind of because my job is to kind of know what's out right now in publicity. So I try to be more original now, where I'm like, okay, this has been done 5 million times. If it's just another reboot of Gossip Girl, probably shouldn't do it. You know what I mean? Or like, how am I going to change it to make it authentic, to make it something that is very different? So it kind of makes me more like critical of my work, which I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, I was about to say that's like a tricky thing because you know so many things and you kind of have, I think, a bit of like the secrets to the thing, but then I imagine it pops up in the middle of like just trying to write the damn thing and like
write it.
But then that slows the process down.
Exactly. And I mean, authors, I feel like that's the first thing they tell you when writing a book, right? That you just have to sit there and write. Like, don't think about anything else at the moment except writing this book. But then it's hard because like all these other things pop in your head because I'm in publicity. And I'm not even in like editorial where I'm supposed to be thinking about the manuscript. I'm supposed to be thinking about after it. So it's like I'm doing the exact opposite thing that I'm supposed to do in my job. So it can be kind of like, okay, just stop and write and see if it makes sense later, which is you have to tell yourself that.
Sound advice, but hard to follow.
Exactly. So, but, you know, you hear some of these authors, like, I don't know if you guys have read The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes, and this is, like, her 20th book, and it hit the list, it hit the Times list, it's, like, getting great coverage, but she's written 20 other manuscripts, 20 other books, and this is the first book that's hit the New York Times, and it's, like, a dream come true for her. But she just kept going, she kept going, she kept going. So when you, like, think of things like that, you're like, okay, like, she did this. We can do this. You know what I mean? So it's, like, those stories. Or sometimes you read a book, and it's, like, very different that sometimes I'm like, okay, this is a very interesting kind of book. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, okay, well, if this book got recognized by someone, then so will mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that, like, truthfully, you read and you're just like, I don't know what I just read, and yet the world has, like, accepted it. It's become this, like, big thing.
Exactly.
I think that's, like, true across art forms sometimes. And there's truly no accounting for taste. Like, it's just, it is what is of the moment, you know, what people crave or are looking for in the moment that sticks.
Exactly.
And there's no...
Some things have an acquired taste, and, like, people go crazy over this, like, this whole fandom of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, and then it picks up just like that. So that's another thing. It's not like math where it's like, it is what it is. It's very, you know, different.
The whole process. Yeah. It's going to be subjective the whole way through.
Exactly. Subjective. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
That's
so
tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're on a bit of a break. It's not a bad thing that you're on a bit of a break, but you are writing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're writing? Is it secret?
No, I mean,
you tell us as much as you're comfortable with. You don't have to give us the whole rundown. You can hold it.
I've been so bad in COVID, I think, because I'm just on my computer for work all day that when I'm off of it, I shouldn't, like, I just don't want to do anything.
Everything's starting to give me, every screen is starting to give me a headache now. It's a problem.
It's a problem. And then, you know, everybody's like writing a notebook, and I could do that, but then I just feel like I'm doing homework or something. And sometimes I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to think anymore.
It takes too long. I don't know about you. My hand can't keep up with, like, my brain. So then it's just behind and there's just too much lag and I can't.
It's lag.
That's a problem.
Exactly. And so what I like to do when I write is I do like to do the first draft in a notebook, because I'll type every 4 or 5 chapters, I'll actually type it up, and then I'll catch all these little errors, right? So it's almost like I'm drafting it, but then I'm also editing it after.
Mm-hmm.
But again, after the 4th or 5th chapter, I have to put it on, like, I have to write it, type it out. And I just don't feel like doing that, so I just haven't. which is like, so my first book, though, that I wrote, and I did finish it, like, I finished the first draft. I just have to go back and edit it, which, as everybody knows that likes to write, you go back and edit it. It's almost like doing it all over again, right? It's about a guardian angel, and she dies suddenly, and she's kind of thrown off. Like, she doesn't know what's going on, and she becomes this angel, but she doesn't, like, she's like, cool, what kind of angel am I going to be? And they're like, well, you're a great, you know, you were a great person in life. You're going to be this, a guardian angel. And she's like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand. So at first she's like, okay, I don't understand. She's kind of like coping over the fact that she's still not alive. But then she gets excited because she wants to help people. And in life, she liked to do that. But then, you know, she's a new angel. So they're kind of like, chill, hold out. Like, you don't even have your wings yet. You're going to get a small assignment. So you're not going to help with world hunger or, you know, poverty. You're going to help this girl who's been through it. And she's kind of like, I don't understand. Like, this girl, to her, her name's Scarlett. She's, you know, pretty rich compared to what Lena was in her life. She has a family, and Lena kind of came from, you know, a broken family. Both her parents were gone, so her grandmother raised her. And she's like, I don't understand. Like, this girl is fine. Like, she's great. There's nothing wrong with her. But there is. And she has to kind of help figure out why she has to help her. And in that, she accidentally exposes herself. Guardian angels are supposed to not be seen, and she accidentally exposes herself because she's a new angel, and Scarlett's like, what the hell? No pun intended, because it's heaven. And she's like, I don't need help. I must be dreaming. Like, what's going on? And Lena's like, well, I can't go away, and I can't get my wings. I can't be a full angel until I help you. And Scarlett's like, well, I can't help you. Like, I can't help you help me because I don't need help. So they constantly learn how to help each other. And through that, they kind of help each other with loss, help each other figure out what the problem is. And at the end, they kind of both realize, without giving too much away.
Yes, don't tell us the whole thing.
I won't tell the whole thing. But they help each other, and they realize that both of them needed each other. And, you know, so it's like, I like it because I don't like 100% fantasy. Like, I'm not really like a fantasy person. I kind of like realism, like fantasy realism. So it's like fantasy, but in the real world. So my interpretation of heaven is the fantasy part. But then she accidentally exposes herself. So it's like in real time.
It's a little bit grounded.
Yeah.
What would you say the, like, genres that you like to write are, then? If there's, like, one that you stick to, or do you bounce around?
Oh, I definitely like to write young adult. I think it's such a fun age. I feel like I still am one. I think it's just such a fun time to write about. I think, you know, I think that we all kind of think of ourselves, at least I do, still in that kind of, like, 15, 16 on, like, what is life? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think everybody has that question.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of the times, like, when you're a teenager, you think adults kind of have it figured out. And then when you're an adult, and then you start talking to adults, and you're like, they don't know either. We're all just,
nobody knows.
No one knows. But the thing I love about teenagers is that they admit that they don't know. And, like, usually, you know what I mean? They're like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Especially when I was a teenager, I'm like, I don't know what I want to do, but I know that there's this life, you know, on what's going on. And adults are like, we know, just so that we can tell the teenagers they don't know what they're doing. But really, no one knows. And in that, you have this imaginative space, and it's just fun. And it's like, I feel like in high school, you have that stereotypical, like, you know, mean girl, like, nice girl trope, the girl next door, the boy next door.
Yeah.
So it's fun. Versus, like, middle grade, I feel like it's very confusing. I don't want to relive my middle school days.
Me neither.
You know, so I'm like, I'm not good at writing about middle schoolers. I'm not going to pretend like I understand you, because I don't. And then picture books, I think, are adorable. But I'm not, as you know, Davinia, I am not someone who isn't long-winded and, you know, can do, like, two sentences per page it's on a picture book.
Yeah, you have to be both, like, really imaginative for picture books, but also very concise and specific. And, like, every single word from what you've told me has to really count. Because there's only so few that, like, you only get a couple.
There's only about 40 to 50 sentences, really, in a picture book, if that. And a lot of people always think it's super easy to do a picture book. And I'm going to tell you right now, like, the picture books that I have, I love, but it's hard. It's, I think, for me, in my opinion, it's one of the hardest genres to write, because you have to, you have to think about the parents who are reading it, the kids as well, and they're in such different spaces, and you kind of have to connect those two together. And then a lot of people don't know this, but most authors don't know their illustrator when they first write their manuscript. So that it's up to the publisher to kind of find an illustrator that, like, you know, helps your writing come to life, which is hard, you know, so it's like, it's really hard to do. And kids are so imaginative, and they're such beautiful souls that I feel like I would need them to, like, judge my work as a picture book creator. And that's not a thing. They're not gonna, like, give it to a kid and, like, but I feel like they would need to do that. So I'm like,
a little child, like, beta reader.
Exactly. To see if they like it or not. So I love picture books. I really admire them. I think, you know, that's a reason why so many of them are classics among the other genres, is because, like, they stay with you. You know, they're the first thing you remember. But I am not.
I'm not a picture book writer.
No.
Now, this is a sticky question, but I'm interested because you actually work in publishing. What is, so there's always, like, the debate about, like, what the actual age range for YA is. Do you all, like, cover that? What is that, to someone who actually, like, works in publishing, what is that age range supposed to be?
So do you want, like, the textbook answer, or do you want, like, the opinion of what I think it should
be? I want the opinion. I want the Tondi answer. I will always want the Tondi answer.
So in my opinion, young adult books, especially nowadays, when you're, like, 10, you start reading YA. You start migrating to that side of the bookstore. You want to know about the big kids. You want to know what they're doing. And you want to be just like them, so you read about them. And it could be from 10 to really on. I know 40-year-olds that have joined our, like, virtual Zoom events for a young adult book. I think she was 40. I think that's the oldest I've seen. My mom, she'll ask me, like, oh, I want to read that. And she's got two kids who aren't even teenagers anymore. So, like, you know, it's seriously universal. I feel like everybody kind of relates to a young adult novel because you've either been through high school, and everybody goes through high school, and it's a time in everybody's life that you'll somewhat remember, or you're kind of fascinated with high school because you haven't been yet. So, and at least for me, when I was in middle school, it wasn't that I wanted to be in high school because I was kind of scared, and I looked like I was 10 when I was 13, but it was, like, fascinating, you know what I mean? When you watch, like, Mean Girls and all these, like, teen movies and, like, High School Musical, and you're like, oh, my God, is high school going to really be like that? So you read these books, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when you're in high school, you might be, you know, you might not be the popular person, but you want to see how they live and you want to see how they interact. And so you kind of read this to kind of, like, go into that space where you can pretend to be that. Or you are that and you, like, laugh at yourself, whatever. That's what it is. You just remember, it's like a John Hughes movie. You'll always love those 80s classic movies, even though you're not in the 80s anymore. It's the same thing with a young adult book. That's totally my opinion. It's totally
but
what
I dig
I think.
It. No, I think but, as long, yeah. especially, like, as you get into it and the more I talk to people, like, I don't know that many people who are our age, which is, like, mid-20s and, like, older, who aren't willing to still read that, or at least still interested in it. Now there is the whole, like, debate of, I think, I know, like, I crave learning and being able to read something about people in the, like, mid-20s to, like, approaching 30s, because that's a hell of a journey in a very specific way. And it would be nice to have, not necessarily guidance, but, like, you know, just some recognition of that, of the space that it is to hold that beyond, I think, what's out there right now. That's a whole thing.
No, I agree. I think that, no, I totally agree. I mean, I'm 24, almost 25.
Yeah.
And so when I read a book about, like, you know, careers and, like, you're just getting started in your career, or, like, you know, that that girl, she's in this big city and she doesn't know what the hell she's doing. Like, I love those books because it's like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
But I also love young adult because it's like, okay, did I do this in high school? Like, I laugh at
myself. Was I that person? Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like, you laugh about it. Sometimes it's unrealistic. Like, that would never happen. You know, like, this jock just randomly bumps into this girl who's on, like, the math leads, and then 2 weeks later, they're, like, going out. Okay, that's not going to happen. But, like, you know, you laugh about it. You like it. It's funny, you know, but it's like, okay, this wouldn't happen. So I kind of like that, too. Sometimes I like to read about it and, like, have all this commentary on what I read.
Your commentary is legendary. TV, books, Tanya Jackson has words all the time.
Like, I will watch it and, like, I will read things and act like the characters can hear me. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then they do it and I get mad. So it's like, you know, so it's like that. But I do that with a lot of YA books. And then when I'm going into, like, adult or, like, younger but adult books, I'm usually laughing, or I'll kind of, like, catch myself and be like, is that what people do? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm just like, am I just totally naive, or I don't know this? Like,
yeah. Everything's a learning curve.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, like, fun in a different sense, or, like, I'll have, like, my current roommate now, like, have her read it. I'm like, does this make sense to you? Do people do this? Like, it's just, so it's, like, it's just funny, you know what I mean? And that's what I like to read. But for my job, I kind of have to read everything. So if I do have to read a middle grade novel, and I'll kind of, like, I feel like, oh, I feel for you. You know what I mean? Or I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, I, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't ever remember being this confident in middle school, but good for you. So
you have to find the ways to connect with the things.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you have to do so much reading for your job, and I feel for that because that's, I think, the same in my work, too, where it's reading. If reading is part of your job and, like, writing, even if it's for marketing or for some sort of publicity thing, becomes part of your job, but it's also the thing you love to do. When you work in what you love, I'm interested at least in, like, what are the other things that you do? Because obviously you love to read, obviously you love to write. But I think, like you said, with how you can't write currently, and it's just, like, not a thing. It's, like, what are the other things that you do that take up the space in your life? Because you're just, like, I do this all the time, and I love it, but goddamn it, I do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love it. You do it all the time. And, like, it's so funny. Like, you know me. I really, especially COVID, like, it's sad because, like, I can't go out and, like, be with people, and I love to talk so much.
Yeah.
Like, I love to just, it's refreshing to me to go out amidst all these people, and, like, it, you know, it's refreshing. It kind of, like, energizes me. So I haven't been able to do that. So, you know, I'm not gonna lie, this year has been very, like, Netflix binge. Like, I've cleaned my house a million times. I'm a very clean person. I actually started, like, making lists of what I want to do when this thing is over. So, like, goals, like, goal setting. I think that's good. And I love to dance. So dancing has kept me sane in this whole thing, like, music, dancing, in that creative space, because I can still do that. And I think I've seen family more in COVID. I definitely, like, I got an Apple Watch recently, so.
Really?
I try to walk. Well, you know me, I walk.
You walk
everywhere.
A lot. I can't imagine anything. What's the most steps? When I was with you, I think the most steps you did in a day, at least when we were living together, was, like, what? It was an insane number. Like, I think, no, it was 14 miles. Didn't you walk 14 miles one day?
I did.
Just for fun? For the hell of it?
For the hell of it. Yeah, especially now in COVID, because I'm like, well, I usually, like, during the week, I usually don't go out, right? Because I finish work at, like, 6:37, which I'm not supposed to, but I do. And then I'm like, oh, God, it's, like, dark out.
Are you
out.
Still
now,
terrible at getting off when you're supposed to get off, Tanya?
So,
you know, we'll save
I'm
that
worse. I'm
off
worse
the podcast. We'll save that off the podcast. I can't believe you're doing that.
Because I don't have, like, a time limit that I'm going home, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because it's, like, I don't, it's horrible. I know, I get yelled at all the time. By, like, my parents and my
boundaries
too. I know. It's so bad. I have to, like, make myself close the computer. But now that it's getting lighter out, later and it's warmer. Definitely. Let's see. Okay. The furthest I've walked, that is very rough. So Manhattan is like a long island for people that don't know. And I've, my longest walk I think has been from its southern tip. So like go like, you know, towards like where the World Trade Center is, all the way up to like 73rd Street, which is like the Upper East Side.
That's like
next to Central Park.
Was that so like 80 blocks?
It was nine?
Yeah.
It was before the grid even started that I started walking. I was like, I was like, it's warm out. Like, let me just walk. And I did. Like, I got my cookies. You know, I like passed all my like favorite stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just walked. Like, you see the different neighborhoods in New York. That's what's really cool about walking. So you go from like, you know, really trendy and like, you know, very urban. I mean, you go to like these really like uppity, you know, elite stores to then like this really like chill hole in the wall, you know, bakery. But they're all fun and they're all different people and you just people watch. And I need to be around people. So people watching is really fun for me. And I'll have like my little, what do you call that, audiobook on. So I'm listening to reading, which is good. Because sometimes I just don't want to look at a page. You know what I mean? Like I don't feel like staring at. So I can listen, but also like look at the world around me. Mm-hmm. Which is really good. I've gotten really into audiobooks because of that. It was great. But then I was like, I kind of overdid it. Because then when I got home, I was like, oh, my legs hurt really bad.
You always forget. It's ridiculous. You'll just walk. Tondi's not a person. If you meet Tondi Jackson and Tondi says, let's go for a walk, don't do it. Don't do it. Because she doesn't mean like a fun little 30-minute walk. She's not talking about like around the neighborhood. No, she will take you literally like, from wherever you are in Manhattan to the bottom of the tip. And then she'll be like, let's walk back up.
In rain or shine. Like
rain or shine.
When I lived in New York for quite literally a hot second, that was kind of I just did the same thing. I lived on the...
Jake gets it?
Yeah, I was living on the west side up by, like, 106, like, a little bit down from Columbia.
Oh, you were on the opposite side of where we were.
Yeah, it was really nice. I think I walked from there... Not to, like, the southern entrance of Central Park, but not too far off.
Mm-hmm. The southern... Oh, so, like by the plaza? Like, close... Like, that, like, yeah, Columbus like, Circle kind of thing?
Oh, no, I mean, like, close to Midtown. Like, south.
Oh, okay. Oh, south. Like, you walked south. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, and, like, Jake, you're a walker, so isn't it easy in New York to walk far? Because you're just kind of, like... fascinated
you don't notice
with all
it.
These things. You don't notice how far you're
you don't
walking,
notice it.
Right? Yeah.
Tanya has tricked me many times in that. You don't notice it.
New York is deceptive because it's flat. So you can go a lot longer. But then, like, with you getting more into audiobooks, that's when I really got into podcasts.
Yes. Because you're just... You know, you're just, like, listening. Because one time I did walk, and I didn't have anything. And I'm like, okay. So I was listening to, like, other people, which kind of made me lonely. And I was like, I don't want to do that. So I started, like, kind of having my own thing, but then, like, watching people. And that was better. So you're right. Podcasts, audiobooks, it helps. And, like, Davinia knows. Yeah. I would make her walk, and she'd be like, oh, my God. Like, you know, it'd be, like, later on, I'd be like, my legs hurt. She's like, yeah, because you walked, like, 10 million miles.
You walked so far. And then she's confused. And she's just like, wow, I'm really tired. It's like, Tondi, we've
I'm
been
so
walking
tired.
Since the morning. And it's now night. The sun is down. And we have not hopped on a single train. Which,
not
like, yes,
train.
We got our steps in. But damn, please.
And
we got our
York,
steps in,
like,
but at what cost?
At what cost?
At what cost? I know, and it's, like, in New York, there's really no point in, like, getting a gym membership because, like, Davinia knows, we lived on the third floor, and so, like, groceries is, like, an exercise. You're walking up those stairs with, like, five bags of groceries, and then, like, that's your arm day and your leg day all in one.
Not to mention, like, bringing the groceries home. Yeah. Like bringing them all the way from the store, walking with them from the store, walking through them like in the subway. That was a journey. I cannot tell you how grateful I was to be back in like grocery shopping with a car. I miss a lot of things about the city, but like it's nice to just park and take my groceries upstairs. I can't walk with them anymore. I don't want to.
I know. It's rough. It's rough. And like I get like odds and ends all, you know, I don't do everything all at once, but like you and my current roommate now, she'll just get like a bunch of stuff and I'm like, I don't, like she'll have like six bags and she like puts them in the hallway and like puts them, I'm like, oh God, like, you know, then you have to spray everything down and it's like this whole
It's a long process.
And when COVID first happened, they told you to wipe down your groceries. I don't know if you guys did that also, but so it took even longer because we had like this like disinfectant spray that you always just use Divinia, but like now we were currently using it for everything, and then we had to like wipe like Clorox everything
out.
It was horrible, and it was like it took like an hour, honestly. It took so long. And then I come home to like visit my parents and they're like, yeah, like we'll get all these groceries, and it's like so easy. And you're really you're like, wow, okay.
Well, your parents are in a whole different place too, and also I know your dad does like different, he shops different, he just is different.
You remember but that? So,
yeah, you are from Massachusetts and your parents are up there. You're truly like a Northeastern woman in that whole area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what's that like? And what's it like? Because I know your parents are in Massachusetts. I'm not sure what part of Mass. I forgot.
They're in like Southwestern Mass now. They're from Boston, both of them. But then when I came along, they wanted to kind of move me out of the city. Did they want
a lot of good that did?
Yeah, right.
just for you to move back to New York City.
Exactly. Like, it was always in me. Definitely, it was always in me. But they wanted me to have, like, you know, I think school systems are a little bit better sometimes when you go outside of the city, unless you pay, like, a bunch of money in the city. And my parents, at first they did that, but then they were just like, this is too much. So they, you know. So, you're right. I went from night and day back to day. I was, you know, in the city for the first like 6 years of my life, and then I moved to this tiny, tiny little town where my parents are from the city. So when we first moved there, like they were nervous because of how quiet it was. Like they didn't adjust to it well because there was no cars, you couldn't hear anything. Like my dad was like, I'm nervous. Like he kind of was in our living room, like before we unpacked everything, like kind of like keeping guard. Like, what if somebody just comes through the door? Like, it was just, like, not... It was not in his brain to, like, have things be quiet. But I grew up with him, and he always has a city mind, so a lot of people in the suburbs don't lock their doors, and, you know, they don't... They're kind of a lot more lax, because you can be. But I wasn't that way, because I didn't grow up that way. So, in the city, it wasn't like I had to learn how to lock my door. Like, that was always...
That's wild.
Close the blinds.
No matter where you live, you should do these. You know what? I can't deal with the not blind closing. I can't.
Oh, my God. You and I used to talk about this all the time.
We did. No, because, like, we live... Like, you live in an apartment complex.
Yes.
And, like, even, like, if you're in row houses, like, we could literally see, like, apartments across the way. And they just never put their... Like, they never close it. What?
It's a real problem.
I can see your whole room.
You could see everything. And, like, in college, I lived right across from, like, a very expensive, like, high-rise. And these people thought, oh, you know, free and fancy, I'm on the 86th floor, nobody can see me. We can see you. Like, we can see everything we're doing. I've caught people cheating on their spouses. I mean, it's like... I've caught, like, this guy was taking, like, naked Polaroids one day, like, because he didn't close his blinds, and I don't want to see that, but, like, what am I supposed to do? It's horrible. It's horrible. Like, blinds, I don't know, people don't close their windows.
They're such a great invention. You just use it. Just use it, y'all.
It's so bad. And in the suburbs, people don't lock their windows, people don't lock their doors. Like, people, like, their cars. And my dad was like, never, you know? Like, and honestly, a lot of people think stuff happens in the city, but people break into your homes in the suburbs. That's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but it's true, because they know people don't lock their doors. They know people aren't home during the day, like Home Alone, you know? So it's like people will do things. And again, I don't, from this conversation, I'm pretty sure you guys know my dad is very protective. So he's always like, lock the door, you know, put the stick in the door. So when I moved to New York, they kind of lost their minds a little bit. Like, they were happy for me. They believed in me, but I'm this small, like, 5'2 girl. And they're like, oh my God, like, calling me every day. Are you inside? Why are you on the train at 8:30? And I'm like, oh my God. So I kind of like, you know, but in that, I kind of got in the system where it's like just certain things that I've remembered from my parents. I think when they lived in the city, it was a lot more rough than it is now, you know, so they had to really be on high alert. But in that, I had to learn how to also be on high alert.
Yeah.
You know, neighborhoods that I shouldn't go into. You know, if you, I think the biggest advice from my parents that I got was like, if you feel unprotected, like, don't feel bad that somebody's making you uncomfortable. Like, if they make you feel uncomfortable, that's how you feel, and trust your instincts. So, you know, on the train, you and I, we used to do this whole, are you on the 6 train?
Yeah,
the 6 train
was our thing.
Firehouse.
Home.
So it's like, if we both got home late, it would be like, I'm on the 6 train. And that, you know, it's just good. Just letting someone know where you are. Never like going through a park or anything late at night. That's like my rule of thumb. Even though I love to walk, I'll never walk across Central Park at night. I'll always walk around it. And unfortunately, there are no trains that go right across, so it's really annoying.
Nope. I was gonna say, no matter how far you are, and it's the worst when you're like in the middle of it. So you either have to walk all the way up to the top or all the way up to the bottom, and then around and then back.
It's the worst, because the Upper East Side doesn't believe in having the train noise. So they don't.
No, they hate us.
There's only one train that really goes all the way up and down the Upper East Side. So, but yeah, so like different things, like different checkpoints that I've learned. I have to stick in the door at night, lock my windows, close my blinds, you know, like, and it's so funny because a lot of people in my job and everything, they're like, oh my God, like, that you're so paranoid. And I'm like, I'm really not, though. We live with so many people in the city. Like, how are you guys not paranoid?
So many things are so average, and there's just so many, like, it depends on, like, what your space is, but so much, and I mean, it's why people go to the city, but, like, the whole point of living in a city is that it's accessible. So many things are accessible, but that includes, like, your home and, like, all of the things around you. And it's not that hard to, like, put pieces together. Yeah, I don't know. People are funny.
And it's funny because, like you said, I'm a Northeast girl, like, all the way, born and raised. And I will say the Northeast, is they run fast, they move fast, but they're sometimes misunderstood. Everybody thinks that they're mean and, like, we don't care. And it's not that we don't care. We just have somewhere to be, you know? And then, like, when you slow down for a second, like, I've had, like, tourists ask me, where am I going? And at first, like, it's kind of funny because I never take myself as, like, an intimidating person to come up to, which is, I think, why a lot of people come up to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when they first come up to me, my initial reaction is, who are you? Like, why are you so close in my zone? You know, my bubble. Yeah. Because it's, like, in the Northeast, we don't do that whole, like, touching, how are you? Like, good morning thing. That's not, nobody does that. You know what I mean? Like, it's and everybody thinks it's cold, and it's just kind of, like, just nobody's in that mindset. And then they'll come up to me, and I'm kind of like, oh. And then once I realize what they want, I'm like, oh, hi. Like, I kind of am, like, lax. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, you need to get to Times Square? Yeah, you're on the wrong side. Go this way. You know, and then I'll help you. But at first, that initial, like, what do you need is like, oh, why are you next to me? And it's like, oh, okay. And so, like, I had a coworker who was from Alabama, which is, like, night and day.
That's south.
It's, like, the deep south. And she was so discouraged because, like, she was at first very, like, I don't think anybody likes me. Like, you know, she was like, I talk so slow. And, like, I'm like, oh, no. It's not that anybody doesn't like you. It's just, like, you know, kind of do what you need to do and then like hang out. You just take care of business first. So she would like go And Davinia, you know, like, she would go into a bagel store and, like, talk to the person instead of, like, order first. Mm-hmm. And, like, people are like, oh, my God, what do you want? And so it's like, I'm like, yeah, yeah, order first. And then, like, step outside of line. And then talk to people. Like, do that.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. She was so, like, discouraged. I was like, no, it's not you. It's literally just everything's fast here. And you just
it's such
just
a culture kinda, shock.
Like, it's a culture shock, yeah. And, like, one of my best friends, she moved to South Carolina. She got married and she moved. And it was the opposite for her. She's like, oh, my God. I was checking out, like, groceries, and I asked the lady. All I asked was, how are you?
Oh,
and it was
no.
this very slow conversation because she talks so slow.
No, and, you know.
Like, it's not that we're just really fast talkers, so I'm just kind of like, okay.
It just moves. No, you and I had a whole discussion because Maryland's, like, neatly placed to, like, we know enough about the South, and we also know enough about the Northeast that we kind of, like, straddle that line, which is exactly where Maryland is located.
You're, like, the middle child.
Yeah, we're the middle child, and we understand both sides, so there's a lot of Maryland that's, like, very Northeastern, very fast-paced, still has that sensibility, and yet still a lot of the culture here is that Southern culture. It is that, like, pleasantries. You say, excuse me. That was the biggest thing for me in New York. Nobody says this. Tani knows. I complained about that all the time. Nobody ever says anything when you want to move out of the way. And I get it.
It was
I get
so
it. But, oh,
funny.
That was hard. That was hard.
Was like, nobody says, excuse me. People are so rude. And I'm like, people probably don't even see you.
They don't. And I get it. I get it. But, ooh, that was another relief when I came back here. I was like, yes, you speak. It's fine. It's just, it's two very different cultures, right? And I think, but my, what I've heard this a couple of times now, and it really does strike a chord with me, and it's mostly about, like, East Coast versus West Coast, but, and that's, like, a whole other battle, but the East Coast is, like, kind but not nice, but the West Coast is nice but not kind, and that really does strike me, because, like, people in New York don't seem, they're not nice, truthfully. Like, people, especially the further north you go, they're just, like, not that nice, because nobody has time to be nice. But they will be kind. Like, you can stop a stranger, and they'll tell you where you're going. They might tell you a little bit rushed. They might be walking as they tell you. But they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you. Yes. You know, somebody might be, like, running down the stairs, but they'll stop, turn around, and help the woman with the baby carriage.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then they won't say a word to her as they help her. And then they will walk away after they're done helping her. And that's the whole transaction.
That's real. Time is money. So it's, like, and it's funny, because my dad is very, like, talk to me. You know what I mean? But he will help anybody who needs help. If, you know, he's like, okay, no BS. Like, if you really need help, I'll help you. You know, he'll help a lady walk across the street, you know, whatever. But it's like, he has to see it. And it's like, oh, yeah, like, I got you. I'll help you, whatever. But it's like, I'll do it as I'm doing something else, as I'm moving. But we want to help people. We're nice people. If you need directions, let me help you. Like, you know, this little girl in the train station, she, like, couldn't find her mom. Somebody walked her to a little policeman, and she found him, and he was fine. But she found her, and it was fine. But it's just, like, you're kind of, like, thinking, like, as you walk, you're just, like, what's my day going to be? What do you? It's, like, constant, this constant, you know, like, waterfall that just keeps going and keeps flowing, keeps flowing. I've never been to, like, the West Coast. I've heard that, like, it's kind of, and I don't know, like, no insult to anybody who's on the West Coast, but I've heard it's like, oh, my God, we love you. But then, like, they don't. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's true.
I don't know it personally, but that is what I hear. Those are the accounts that I hear.
Your
sister
used to, right? And she was in L.A. for a while.
Yeah, she spent some time. We've all spent some time. And, like, my family took a lot of time when we were young in that. And then I think my dad just really loved San Diego, California. Like, he really, I think if there was, like, a place of his soul that he could be that was not D.C., it would be there. It was just, like, really peaceful to him and really quiet. And so we spent a lot of time there just because of how much he loved it. And it, you know, I was younger, so it's obviously easier to be nicer to a child. And the culture is just different, right?
It's
there's something.
It's distinctive.
It's distinctive, and I can't, I'm not from there, I'm not going to say that I'm from there, and I haven't been there enough to, like, put a finger on it specifically, but it is distinctive from the East Coast, and I think a lot of people feel that, but I'm not going to disparage the West Coast until we get someone from there.
No, yeah, exactly, and I think it's, like, also when you're in the East Coast, you're just in it. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, go, go, go. But then, like, when you go, like, you know, my parents love the Caribbean because it's so lax. And so my dad goes there. He's, like, very chill because he can be. But up here, it's like, well, that's just how it is. So it's like, you know, if the river is flowing, the boat is going to flow the same way that the river is going. It's not going to not keep up. You know what I mean?
It's so,
so that's kind of how it is here. Like, people don't even think about how fast they're going because everybody, they're just trying to keep up with everybody else. But once you talk to people, once you get their actual personality, you realize it's like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, as a group, we're all crazy going fast, but like, if you just talk to us one-on-one, minus our talking, I mean, I know we talk fast, but whatever, you know, then
truly, yeah, if you're on the Northeast, it's different. Northeast people do talk really fast. And I think I've always, that's always what my dad said. He knew, he was like, you're going to do well in New York because you talk super fast all the time.
Yeah.
Even for like my family and from Maryland. But the thing is, even though the South, you know, people speak slower, the accent's different. There's the drawl, you know, that people know about.
Oh my God, yes.
The South really still moves just as quickly, especially the southern cities. Like, Atlanta is a crazy city. And like all of the cities in North Carolina, the further you go down the coast, it's really... That doesn't leave, that idea of like pacing and things that have to happen doesn't leave no matter how far down the South that you go. It just, the culture of how quick people move when they speak to each other is what's different between North and South on the East Coast.
Right, right. I think, and I mean, I was only in Atlanta for like a week. Like, people were like, I remember like we were driving and somebody just
don't drive
stopped.
In Atlanta.
No, I, but I remember, and, my dad can hear me, I wonder if he remembers, but, like, somebody just stopped to, like, say hello, but we were, like, so used to road rage that we were like, what? What's the problem? And then we're like, oh, you're saying hi. Like, hi! And it wasn't, like, bad, we were just caught off guard, like, we were like, oh, what do you want? Like, what is the issue? And then we're like, oh, because nobody does that in New York. There's no, like, how are you today? Like, it's just like, you know, oh my God, you're going too slow when the light turns green. You know what I mean? So it was, like, really funny because we were all just like, what? And then, you know, it was fine. But, and we were nice once we knew that it wasn't a
you just, you have to learn the place that you're at, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I have to learn that people don't say, excuse me. You have to learn that people say hi. It's, everybody's learning. We're all learning.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I love traveling, because I think it's like the Northeast is such a distinctive place. You go to these other places and it's like, you know, you come out of that little bubble, and you know, just things move, like you said, they're fast, but at the same time, like, people are more lax, I think, and so it's just nice to like see that as well. So, you know,
I could talk about cities with you forever, but I do want to talk about the organization that you brought with us today, and we've had so much fun talking. But you chose Literary Ink. And I want to say the process for the organization that you chose. So usually when we email you and we're like, hey, please join us on our podcast, we tell people, you know, if you've got an organization that you want, let us know. And then people usually come up with their own. I think I really enjoyed the fact that you were open and you were just like, you know, I don't know that many nonprofits. Let me know. And so we kind of curated a list for you of different writing nonprofits. And I think part of what we want to do at Greatest City Collective is there's so many different nonprofits to support, so many different organizations doing great work. And as much as we're happy to highlight people's specific ones, we're also just in general looking to let people know that these exist. And also, it's not a bad thing that you don't know that all of these exist, because there's so many. So I'm just grateful to you for, you know, saying like, hey, this is a world that I haven't dipped into yet. What's out there? Because that's what we do. That's our thing here.
And no, thank you for, and I love the little links you gave me too. Like,
I know I'm thorough.
You are. no, it's good. Sometimes, again, speaking from the whole fast thing, I don't even, you know, think about it. And then I'm like, oh yeah, like there, especially with the pandemic that's been happening, there are so many different nonprofits that we should recognize. And where I'm in a place of literary, you know, I'm trying to get people to be in that literary world. It's so important. So thank you just for sharing that with me. Yeah.
No worries. So we came up with a couple of different writing organizations. The one that really struck a chord with you was Literary Inc. That's an NYC-based org. But before I kind of go into their, like, official spiel of what they do, tell us a little bit about, like, what you learned about them and why you chose them.
So I just loved how it helps kids who might have struggles with reading, because I was definitely, believe it or not, I hated reading. I hated books, actually, which broke my mother's heart. But as a kid, you don't like something if it's really hard for you, if it embarrasses you, and then you kind of just, you know, forget about it. And I loved it because I think that they take the time to actually help kids, and then they realize that they like it. You know, I think with a lot of children, they just need time. Kids just need, you know, they need time to learn, to process. You know, learning is power. And that's what people did for me. And in schools, you know, people really took the time to say, okay, you have to know how to read. It's not scary. It's great. And then I just kind of, like, took off from there. And I say to myself, where would I be now if I just said I didn't like books and I didn't like to read? I wouldn't be in the job that I have. So it really curates lives for people. And I think that children, especially in different areas, I think schools sometimes don't teach the things, you know, in textbooks and everything. You know, there are certain things, especially children in diversity, they don't know a lot of times where they come from. And books can really teach you that. They can teach you to be proud of your heritage and where you come from, and to just love yourself. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, you, there's so many different creative spaces and non-fiction that children should really know about, so that they can understand that they can really grow up to be anything. And I think that all starts with reading. I know that sounds super cliche, but it's
true. Yeah. No, it's really, it makes a lot of sense, and it's so important. Thank you for sharing that with us, because Literary Inc., you know, they're a New York City-based organization that's focused on building a culture of literacy at what they call the neighborhood level. And I think that's why this organization was so fun to learn about, because they focus not just on, you know, the children themselves as they're struggling to read, but also the parents, and making them what they call, like, literacy ambassadors. So they are trying to, like, build these neighborhoods and these communities with access and resources. So not just saying, like, okay, we've taught a child to read, they will read. Like, no, they know you need to be able to actually go find books. You need to be able to see these books, and then you need support at home in however way we can build it, so that way you keep reading and you know someone is there to encourage you to keep reading. So they're
especially like kids are at home now, you know, probably at home more than at school, and it's important to feel comfortable at home and then to also, like, continue the knowledge at home, and you can do that with books. So that's really great too. Like, really important.
Literary Inc. has school and family programs, as well as, like, community and collective programs, where they're collaborating with other libraries and nonprofits to create and deliver different literacy programs, so that way they can reach as many children as they can. And that's really exciting. So thank you, Tandi, for choosing that organization. And that will be on our May list of orgs that we are donating to for the month. So we are excited. You can check them out on our website, greatestcitycollective.org/donate. And for now, Tandi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was the highlight of my week. This is so fun.
I'm so glad to hear it. It was so good to talk to you again. And next week, sad to say it, but also kind of glad that we'll get to take a break and revamp and revisit and figure out what this is. Next week will be Bus Ride Talk's final episode. We will have craftsman Sam Martin with us to talk woodworking, design, and I think most exciting for me, at least, is stained glass. I have no idea what that is. No idea what that's like. Would love to talk about it. So join us. I don't know. There's like color. We'll figure it out. Join us next time, and we'll find out one last time. And as always, thank y'all for listening. And Tandi, thank you again for being here.
Thank you. I'm waving like you can see me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.